대내시죠 기준 말했더니
말해 그다
시민이 아니니까 좀 말해
말해 지금 말해 그나 읽는 자세 하거나 더 그래 별전이야 그 파멀 시민 토명 같은 부글이야 다시
수준이야
깨다 깨다 리트러시다 아니 지 앙지다 최대한다 체력 노동 들이도록 해봐 쉬고 쉬고 없지 견다 자세 하면야 파멀 로준 토명 또는 이런 안 개발 모션
견다
다 규버지대는 하람 개발하면서 그러지
견다
그 지속으로 So this is quite puzzled why this is so.
I think it's really important and interesting. And I think it's interesting, too, that the countries that have the steepest gradient, the biggest difference between the rich and the poor, attain the lowest overall levels. Yeah, it is true. These are data from sociologists that, no, that have made these studies in Western society, and I don't know if comparable studies have been done in the East. But there are huge differences in the disparities between the have and the have-nots in the West, and it makes a big difference to their ability to attain actually health, cognitive skills, but also positive affect, right? There's a recent study showing the kinds of things that Richie will be talking about, positive emotions, are very strongly correlated with socioeconomic status in these countries where the disparities are so big. It's not, by the way, this is not calculated using money. It's just education. Huge differences. Now, we have looked at people from, and in the U.S., as you can see, there's a very steep gradient. We've looked at people in the low and high SES classes, and there are huge differences in their brains and behavior. But...
So this is quite puzzled why there is such a seemingly quite a difference between Great Britain and America because this the kind of disparity of wealth must be pretty much the same.
No, it isn't. No. It isn't actually. My community,
England, which is much larger.
You know those numbers better, right?
Mm. No, I mean Helen's absolutely right. The disparity of wealth is enormous in Great Britain, and it's because you have so much old inherited wealth on one end, and lack of education on the other hand. I mean, you're absolutely right on any measure that disparity is greater in Great Britain.
That could be true. Because U.S. is a new society. It's not so safe.
You know...
So Liz is wondering whether there is also a difference because of the class consciousness. Because in England, it's much more striking.
The
way the authors of the study summarize it is that it is very stratified according to classes, and it's access to educational opportunities that is very much linked to economics. And so this brings about a strong correlation to which Helen is alluding.
Classless society
So this is a strong argument for the need for classless society.
It is. It is.
And equal.
Yeah.
Or equal.
That's right.
Cuban.
Cuban. Cuban's equal. It is. And I agree with you. That's really where I'm going here. Okay. Now, if you look...
That leftist got water.
We are moving more and more towards the left.
I'm leftist.
I know
so,
that.
So my ally.
I know you are. That's why I'm here, really. Now, if you look at what's implied by, say, socioeconomic status in America, say, it's huge. I mean, there are so many ways that high and low SES environments differ, you know? You know, prenatal care is terrible for the low SES people. There's more drug use, more depression, more neglect. The schools in the low SES regions, schools are funded by property taxes. There's no property taxes in low SES environments. There's horrible schools, terrible inequalities in the schools. There's been a recent study showing the levels of cortisol, which is that byproduct of stress, which is damaging to the hippocampus. They're much higher in low SES groups. Well, Michael mentioned that yesterday. And so forth and so on. There are a lot of differences, huge differences. And sure enough, there are big differences in cognitive skills and brain organization in high and low SES people. But we don't know the reason. We can't publish those data because some people would say, well, that's a genetic difference. That's why they're in the low SES, genetic. Oh, no, I would say it's experience. Well, you have to have the evidence. How are we going to sort out genes and environment? Correlation does not the same as causation. I know you know that, but this is a mistake that many, many people make. For example, the fact that mothers talk a lot and the baby has a big vocabulary, people assume the correlation means the mother's talking caused the change. Yeah. We know that isn't necessarily so. Could be biological, could be a third variable. If a musician's brains look bigger in this part than a non-musician, it could be that the reason they became a musician was because they had a bigger part of that brain. You have to show the direction of the relationship. And I'm stressing this now because it's a common critical thinking error that everybody makes. Scientists make this all the time. It's really important to sort it out. So, the way that people are doing this, for example, one group of people are saying, well, let me see if we can see a difference in child language as a function of the complexity of speech the teacher uses to the children. So this person went to classrooms all around Chicago and noted the teachers who use complex speech to their children and looked at the children's language at the beginning of the school year and at the end, and sure enough, there's a good correlation between teacher input and child language growth. And there's no biological confound because the teacher and the child aren't related. So this shows experience affects language development. Another way we know about this is there's a group of pediatricians who take care of children. And they work in low SES areas, and they realize people in these communities don't ever, for example, read a book. So what they have done is go into these areas, and as soon as the baby is born, they give the family a book. And every time they come to see the child, they bring them another book, and they show how to look at pictures and talk, even if you don't read, just talk to the child, just talk. And they compared low SES people who received the books and another group which didn't, and there's a huge difference in language measures. They did the experiment. So the language scores of the children who received the intervention were higher than the children that didn't. So that's another way, taking biology out of the equation. Another way is, of course, to do direct interventions. And this is something that we're doing and that I want to talk to you about a lot this afternoon. So this summer we took a group of children who were having poor language abilities. And we brought them in for every day for 6 weeks, and for 100 minutes a day we played language games with them. And so we say, pick up the red ball and put it to the green square, or something like that. Different games that were engaging to the children. 100 minutes a day, 6 weeks. And we thought that it might improve their language, we wondered. And we thought it might also improve their attention, because they have to sit now and focus for 100 minutes a day. And so what we observed was, before we started the intervention, the children's scores on language were very, very low. They were in the fifth percentile. After just 6 weeks, it moved up to the 20th percentile. So that's a growth of 15% in 6 weeks. And then we looked at them using this, listening to two stories at once, and looked at the brain indices of attention. And what we observed was, now remember, normal children, when they're attending the story, you get this big response, but when they're attending away, you get a small response. That's a normal attention effect. These children, before the intervention, didn't have any attention effect. But after the training, they show a big attention effect. Whoa, so we thought... This is just the first evidence that we have that suggests that very focused training of even as little as 6 weeks can change behavior and the brain. Of course, we have a lot of work to determine how long these changes last and whether they're equivalent for different kinds of training. So this is what we're doing now. And by what we're just beginning this fall is interventions. We're actually going to, ultimately, we will compare interventions in high and low SES children. But we're starting with low SES children because we think that's where it'll make the biggest difference. We're starting with Head Start, children who are in the program called Head Start, which is a preschool program for disadvantaged children. And ultimately, we will compare these interventions at different ages because we have to know when are they most effective. But we're just starting with 3 to 5-year-old children, low SES. And what we're going to do is some of these children will get the language intervention, and some will get 100 minutes a day of music. Some will get 100 minutes a day of science. This just means observation, manipulation. And some of them will get attention training. That's what we want your input on. We have some ideas. We've been talking to different people, even people in this room who have thought about this a lot. But we'd like your input on attention training of little children. And then another group, we're not training the children, we're training their parents to be nurturing and to be sort of giving, mutual give and take. And then we're studying them, brains and behavior, before and after, and we'll look at language processing, attentional processing, and all these different things. And what we hope to do, and then ultimately we'll see, well, are they synergistic? So, for example, would language training... For example, would the language training be more effective if it were combined with music? There's some reason to think this would be true, actually. So we have a lot of work to do. Or more likely, would any of these trainings be more effective in combination with parental training? Yeah. Okay, we're at the summary now. So what I've told you is specialized brain systems are important for every aspect of sensory, cognitive, and social-emotional functioning. The human brain develops over a long time, at least 20 years. Experience drives and shapes the development of these brain systems. Optimal brain development and functioning require, as we've heard, adequate nutrient stimulation and nurturing, and is harmed by drugs, neglect, and stress. We heard that yesterday. What do we have to do now? A lot. For example, we have to determine the time periods of plasticity of other brain systems. What about music? What about math? What about compassion? What about social skills, the theory of mind, or the ability to know what another person knows? We don't know anything about the development of those systems, but we can approach them in the same way. But you see, we have a lot of work to do. Then we have to determine the mechanisms that allow greater or less plasticity. We need more work on that. Then we want to determine which interventions can enhance plasticity. And here's our biggest challenge. And this is where I want your help, actually. The biggest challenge is that we have to convince the public and the people who make policy to be guided by evidence from brain research or from behavioral research. Evidence. This is the hardest thing. I don't know, because people are just, you can tell people almost anything and they don't ask you for the evidence. You could say, look, you know, if you turn around in a circle, hold your left earlobe and eat a carrot, you'll be able to fly. Yeah, try it. Like 90% of the books in the bookstores in America are like that. They just tell you, if you have this blood type, eat this and don't eat that. Take my word for it. And they take their word for it. People do not demand evidence, and they don't know how to evaluate evidence. This is our biggest challenge, honestly. You know, this thing I told you about aligning the eyes by 11 months? We've known this for a long time. My ophthalmologist didn't know that. He asked me, Helen, I did the surgery on this little 4-year-old boy, straightened his eye, and he still can't see depth. His eye is beautiful. The surgery was beautiful. I said, it's about the brain. The neurons need the input at critical times. He didn't know that. So when I said this yesterday, we need help in bringing the information that we work hard to get to the people so they can use it. And that's where we need a big help. And then all we have to do after that is design and implement the educational and support programs that will optimize human development. That's all we have to do then. You know, we could say, well, we want, why do you, somebody asked me once, why do you want to optimize human brain? Well, you know, then they think you sound like a leftist socialist who wants to help everybody be equal. But then I talked to a group of Republicans who are really interested in economic bottom line, and I said, look, it makes economic sense. That's what we were saying yesterday, too. You know, people have put a lot of money to make us do this research. They're not reaping any benefit of it. They're not making any use of it. That's an economic argument. The other argument is, though, that, you know, if you have educational and welfare reform, you'll decrease violence, get people will get more jobs, generate more money. So you, it doesn't matter if you're a leftist or a rightist. This is a good direction to go, it seems to me. Okay. Now, so one of the things that we're doing, my students and I, to try to take the information that we have out to the world, is we've been working really hard the last year to pull together all the information that there is on the effects of experience on the development of the visual system, the auditory system, social and emotional system, and put it into to non-scientific terms and make it to a DVD or a video player or whatever, and we're going to hand it out free. And people in our community who care about children are raising the money so that we can give this free, just so give information to parents, to caretakers, to teachers, to pediatricians, to policymakers, to everybody. And we would be very honored if you would accept the very first of this DVD. But it's not ready yet. But when it is ready, we would be very honored if you would accept the first one. And would be even better if you'd accept the first 100 and hand them out. These are my students who we together give this DVD to you. And I wanted to tell you something else. There's a slang word in America. The slang word for evidence is beef. We say, if you say, if you turn around three times, pull your left ear, I would say, show me the beef. No, show me the evidence. So we call this the beef DVD because beef stands for evidence, but also it abbreviates brain-based evidence for everyday folk. So that's what it is.
Brains,
that's what beef stands for. So, for the sake of the children, I hope that this afternoon we can discuss questions of, well, ethics around the fact that we can enhance attentional systems, language systems, raises, again, the issues we talked about yesterday. Well, who should receive these enhancements? If you couldn't give them to everybody, then who should receive them? And how do we decide that? The scientists get the evidence, and we know the implications of the evidence. But the discussion of the ethical questions needs to be between everybody. But we can't have the discussion if people aren't scientifically literate. It's a big problem. So scientific literacy... So how do we achieve better scientific literacy? How do we convince people to take evidence-based decision-making? And let's talk about attention training in children. So those are some topics that I hope that we will be able to discuss this afternoon. Thank you for your attention.
Excellent. That's awesome. Good.
모든 것이 옛사스.
그럼 모란 송사셔.
다른 쪽으로.
네. 다리 먼저 고치 쟁이는 먼저 이렇게.
무엇이 하겠습니다. 아드시 하겠습니다.
나스.
다음에 개인 좀 잘하셔. 개인 좀 잘하셔.
Topic was extremely very important.
신시 하겠습니다.
He's always saying that nothing specific come to his mind right now. I mean, the issues are very important.
Well, I gave you a lot of information in a short time.
The pigeon and gun as a sometime that got a very married. It's all a scientific that.
So, what he felt, I mean, his immediate reaction was the lot of these data and the evidence that you presented seemed to really sort of gel quite well with kind of a commonsensical intuitions as well.
Mm-hmm. But now it gives it more evidence based to support those intuitions.
Well, we think if we go to the people who hold the money, and if we say, look, if we can't just say, I feel that if I do this, it could make a difference. And but if you have behavioral evidence, like I can improve their knowledge and I can improve their brain systems, that just having two kinds of evidence, biology and behavior, that this would make a difference. This might enable us to change the minds of policymakers when it comes to distributing resources. That's our hope. Mm-hmm. That's our goal.
Your Holiness, first I'd like to just remind everyone in the room that we will not take a tea break this afternoon and we'll go till 3:45. Over lunch, Your Holiness, we are discussing topics that we'd like to raise this afternoon for discussion. And two topics in particular came to the surface, were identified as particularly important for our dialogue. One concerns the education of attention. The other concerns neuroethics and the ethical implications of some of the research that you've heard about. Before we proceed with some of our questions, we wanted to ask you if you'd like to make any comments about this morning or either of these topics.
Hmm. Half already forget.
Half. So you're saying half already forgotten.
I think that discussion, yeah.
Yes, let's begin with the discussion, yeah.
Okay. So the first topic that we wanted to discuss is attentional training. This seems so important on the Buddhist side, and it also is recognized to be very important, as you heard from Helen. In many ways, attentional training can be thought of as the gateway to plasticity. And in fact, William James, the great American psychologist, in his volume, The Principles of Psychology in 1890, wrote in his chapter on attention that educating the attention would be the education par excellence. Those were his words. Par excellence means the highest form of education. But he then went on to say how to do it is a question that we really don't know at this point in time. And that was in 1890. And while there has been a lot of progress in science over the last 150 years, as you've heard, we still have many questions. And so this is where we wanted to begin. And there are many questions which we have. One of the questions, for example, is at what ages should attentional training begin? And we know that in the monasteries, there are certain kinds of training that start very, very early. We were told by Jinpa at lunch about the process of memorization. Mm. And the one of the questions that we had is the extent to which memorization may play some role in facilitating attention. And so this is where we'd like to begin. And if we can begin with thoughts or counsel that you can share with us about educating the attention, the age at which this should begin, I think that would be of great interest to the scientists.
That hengi the jurun jalo ya, has a dilemma. Cherisher, servisher, zombisher. Then you chase the songs of Dunham Young Rapture. The banner, Madame de Beauty Mudua, Zurich, Kurik, any Simri, this was the one. Then I was on a machine because you can already a Beja Lunzicha, famous recall. Gain you, Lunzina does good you are it. And do you want him to touch his edge? Rāngi lūgī sūshī lūgī shāwā kīm dō. Kāntā sīmī bē gyōg rī shā. Hā lē bē dā kāsō rī. Cīk dī lūnzī yā mā rī dī cīpshā nā bē kūdū rī dā. Chērā nā cīpshā nā bē kūdū rī yā. Cīk yīk zhā, cīk lūnzī tūgbā mī rī dō wā. Tā yī nē kāshī mō chāngā kāsā yō dī chāsā ngī. Tā nā dī chāsā mā sūyā yī dī rī chīgī. Tā kūrā Shukubi dongda dongda bi gyudze gyu dingi. Ya, ma kwawa di didu shibu jiyo dingi.
No, no. So as to the recognition of the critical time period, when the attentional training should begin, there's not much the Buddhist tradition can really offer here. But one thing...
In the I think obviously at the young age is better, of course.
There's a general recognition that you should start early. But apart from that, there is no real understanding of the appropriateness of age and when and the critical time
frames.
No, but this does not mean that the grown-ups, especially the elderly, should be discouraged.
At the time of Buddha, one person, 80 years old, his family member always looked down, is that person too old? Then eventually met Buddha. The Buddha gives him every encouragement, and that even that old person, through his own effort, eventually become Tajma, Arahant.
Became enlightened, yeah. So there's a story. So earlier His Holiness was saying that, but there is, however, a recognition within the Buddhist Tibetan intellectual tradition as to